So, let's look first of all at the alia. This is really the most difficult thing because we can't look at it at all. It's an entirely explanatory concept. I couldn't say to you, please, could you bring me your alia? It's not a thing, as it were. It's not even an aspect of your experience that you can easily identify. By its very nature, the alia is, as the text says, indistinct and not possible to make fully conscious. It's the substructure of consciousness itself. There are three terms which are commonly used for this root consciousness. It's also called the root consciousness, mula vijnana, which are metaphors that help to explain it. The first is it's described as vipaka vijnana. Alia is the most common term, so I'll use that. Vipaka means resultant or even fruit. So this kind of consciousness is a vipaka rather than a karma. You should be familiar with that distinction, that there are those aspects of our experience that are volitional, that are karmic, and those aspects of our experience that are resultant. They, as it were, happen to us, whereas the karmic things we make happen. So that the when you open your eyes, the act of looking is karmic, turning your attention in a certain direction. But what the imprint of the sensations upon your eye and mind is vipakic. It's a resultant, if you see what I mean. You can't decide that wall is not there, as it were. It's not within your volition. It's there because of past causes and conditions. Your turning of your attention is karmic, but the presence of the wall, so to speak, and its impact upon you is a resultant. It's a result of what happened in the past. If you like, there's active and passive dimensions of our experience. So the alia is, to that extent, a passive resultant of our past actions. What the substratum of our experience now is what we've done in the past. It's the result of what we've done in the past. It's crystallized past action, crystallized in the particular structure of consciousness that we have. The Buddhist tradition would say that the kind of consciousness that you have is determined even to the extent of whether you're a human being. So that you have a certain kind of way of seeing the world as a result of what you've done in the past, and we've got the consciousness that we've got, which is human consciousness, because of the kind of actions we performed in the past. And the traditional theory is that if you'd acted in other ways, you might be some other kind of being. So that the very nature of your consciousness, according to Buddhist tradition — it's a little hard to fully understand what that might mean from our Western point of view, but that's another story — the very kind of way we see things and cognize them is determined by our past. It's, or at the very least, let's say, it's something that's just given. We can't decide right off to be another kind of being. We can't decide to be a fly and have whatever it is, 56 different lenses for our eyes and see everything in that way, or a dog just seeing everything in terms of smell, thank goodness, and so on. But I would say that because I'm a human being rather than a dog. So this substratum consciousness is a resultant. It's given. It is the effects of the twofold perfuming, the twofold influence from our karma and our cognition. What we've done in the past, the way we've seen things in the past, establishes a basis of our consciousness in the present, which is, as it were, proportional to what we've done in the past. So that's the first point about the alia vijnana. It's a resultant, it's passive. It's not in itself a as it were, thinking, deciding kind of consciousness. Then it's alia, which means a store. Or even storehouse or warehouse. In modern Indian languages, it's even used in that way. Or vidyalaya is a university, a store of knowledge. So the alia is a store. It's something that contains. So it's, as it were, it's like a distribution point, if you like. So that the effects of past actions are, as it were, stored up in it, and then pass on out in our present experience. So the alia is considered as a container of past experience and a distributor of it in accordance with causes and conditions. So the impact of the past establishes the alia in the present, stores up the residual energy from our past actions. And thirdly, it's sarva bijaka. I must be mad doing this with you. I'm trying to explain all this when I only barely understand it. Sarva bijaka means all the seeds. So what are the seeds? Nice agricultural metaphor. So the metaphor is of our past actions being placed, as it were, within the alia as seeds of our future experience. So our present experience is the fructifying, the coming to fruition of the seeds that have been implanted from our past actions. The alia is all those seeds. So all the time, everything we do, every karma that we perform, whether of body, speech or mind, sets up a momentum which is stored in the substructure of our consciousness, or of our minds, if you like, and which then comes to fruition in accordance with circumstances, in accordance with causes and conditions. So different seeds will fire at different points. Some seeds may lie buried in the soil for a long, long time. Some may fructify immediately. It's a bit like I read somewhere that any patch of soil contains thousands of different seeds. And as the climate changes, different plants will come out. But they're all there, just lying ready for the conditions to produce them. So in the same way, our minds have stored within them an enormous range of potentialities, some of which would just never come to experience and just fade away. Some of which will come to experience immediately. Some of which will come to experience in time. As Yogacara doctrine developed, the notion of seeds became much more sophisticated, and it became a very highly organized and classified system. There's a strong will to system, I think, in any human endeavor. You start off with a nice, simple explanatory model, but of course it raises more questions than it answers in some ways, and you get to work and you make it more and more complex. So the idea of the seeds in later doctrine became more complex. But one or two quite interesting points come out of that. In earlier doctrine, it's not made clear whether all the seeds are the result of your past action, or whether some of the seeds are just there anyway, just by virtue of having a consciousness, so to speak. But in later doctrine, that idea is worked out a bit more fully. So in later doctrine, it said that there are seeds that we have within us, potentialities, you could say, that we have within us, that are just there waiting for the propitious circumstances to allow them to flower. So, for instance, the seeds for enlightenment are within us. This is where the Tathagatagarbha doctrine comes in. But, you know, until the right circumstances are there, it won't come into experience. So it probably does, therefore, overlap to some extent with something like a notion of a collective unconscious, that within the alia, one conception of the alia, is that it contains, if you like, all possible experience. And what our actions do is enliven certain ranges of possibility, if you see what I mean. It's as if our actions, like the sun and the rain, that provide the right circumstances for particular seeds to flower. So that's a rather different metaphor, but a very, very interesting one. The idea that the alia contains all possible experience, but that our own actions and thoughts and understandings bring into experience the particular experiences that are proportional to our actions, if you see what I mean. So the alia is an explanatory conception. In a sense, you could say there isn't such a thing as the alia, but it's explaining that underneath our experience there is a mechanism, so to speak, for the transmission of our past actions, which generates our present experience, and that goes on a microcosmic level of, you know, moment by moment happening now, and a macrocosmic level of, you know, many lifetimes in Buddhist tradition and so on.